Welcome back to Radio Rothbard. Hope you enjoyed our content from AERC, but we're back with a fresh new episode, bouncing off the big Mises moment of the weekend with UFC Brazilian fighter Renato Mauciano giving us a big shout out at UFC 300, big fighting event, big victory, big sales for economic policy and Mises in general. He had three of the top performing economics books on Amazon when I checked yesterday. A lot of interest in the ideas and message of Mises following this wonderful viral moment. Someone who is not so excited is Sarab Amari, an interesting kind of conservative thinker. He kind of bounces around in terms of ideological labels. He became famous as the anti-David French guy, and he's gone off since then, who has responded to this moment with the very cynical, "Don't anybody tell him, Mauciano, that our country has been misruled by men and women, Republicans and Democrats, beholden to Austrian neoliberal claptrap for the better part of two generations." Basically, all of the economic woes, I guess, can be laid at the feet of Ludwig von Mises in the eyes of Amari. So to laugh at this guy, I am joined, as always, by my co-host, the executive editor of the Mises Wire, Ryan McMakin, who has written a great deal on neoliberalism, the way that it is used out there, and the like. So, Ryan, what is your response to this this punch back from Amari? And most importantly, do you think he could take Mauciano in the octagon?
Well, I mean, that to ask the question is to answer it. I mean, come on. Amari was of above average fitness, obviously this is not sufficient to address these issues. Although maybe it would be fun to back in my day there was a series of like TV specials where they had like claymation celebrities fighting each other in the ring. I can't remember now what it's
celebrity
called.
Deathmatch.
Yeah, that was it, right? And and it would be fun to have someone in our circles basically showing guys like Ludwig von Mises slapping down, you know, Mises in a 1925 suit, slapping down, you know, some modern troll who doesn't know what he's talking about. And this would include, of course, Sarab Amari, who clearly doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to who's been running the show for 50 years, as well as what neoliberalism is. Because obviously the way he's using it, it has no real meaning whatsoever. So there's a couple of things I think we could point out with his observation. And the reason we point this out is that Amari isn't the only person to say things like this. We see this come up again and again, where, as our producer pointed out right before we started the show, there's an interesting contradiction that people who hate free markets like to point out. They somehow simultaneously to these people, libertarianism is both irrelevant and also libertarianism is what's behind everything that's running the show for decades. So somehow we're both irrelevant and also in charge of everything. So that's a very interesting position to take, I suppose. The reality, of course, is both of those statements are wrong. We're not irrelevant because you can see how leaders of countries with 45 million people like Argentina like to quote Mises and Rothbard. And you've got guys like Mauciano quoting Mises, Rothbard. You, of course, have people who are actually influential who feel the need to denounce us, and they wouldn't bother if we were completely irrelevant. However, on the other side of things is the obvious fact that we're not running the show. And I would challenge Amari to please point me to the metric that demonstrates that hardcore free market Austrian economic school types have been running any major government institutions. Back in 2018, I put together an article called Six Graphs That Show How Much the State Has Grown. And this was in response to claims like Amari. This is often on both the left and the anti-capitalist right, which is growing, which is significant. Anti-capitalism is a very strong current among conservatives. You can see this frequently at the American Conservative. You can see it among protectionists. You can see people who continue to insist from a traditionalist conservative point of view that allowing people freedom to buy and sell what they want is somehow a bad thing. And Amari's clearly in this camp, but he's joined by many, many on the left who insist that for decades now, free market people have been in charge of everything. And so I said, well, okay, point out to me the ways that they've been in charge. And I look at these six graphs, and the number one thing is I look at tax revenues over the last 55, 60 years, going back to 1960. We could go back even further. Let's just go back to 1960. Okay, well, how much has population grown in that time? Oh, 76%. How much has tax revenues grown in that time per capita? 119%. Oh, so more than doubled tax revenue per person. Gee, that doesn't sound to me like a very big free market thing. How about the number of government employees? Well, that's more than doubled in this same time period. How about debt? Well, debt is off the charts. Debt as a percentage of GDP is the highest it's been since World War II, since 1945, when we were told that all bets were off in terms of debt in order to defeat Hitler. So apparently, fighting whatever current wars the United States wants to fight, this is all on the same level of fighting World War II. That's what they would have you believe. And so debt is absolutely out of control. We got the central bank. Hey, Sohrab Amari, there's this thing called the Federal Reserve. It's a central bank. You should look it up. It's actually a very important institution and completely at odds with all things Austrian economics. And, that's right. The central bank has printed up in the last 20 years more than $8 trillion. That's just for their portfolio, where in order to help the regime, they started buying up government securities, that is government treasuries, and in order to prop up banks who are politically influential in Washington, bought up trillions of dollars of their worthless mortgage-backed securities. And how did they buy all that stuff up? Oh, they just printed $8 trillion. That's not very free market, so Rob. So it's just, I can't see any metric anywhere that they can point to and say, yep, all this free market stuff, so much free market stuff going on everywhere, when the reality is the government, the regime fueled inflation, the spending, the pages of regulation, if you look at the Federal Register, has doubled in the last several decades. I mean, it's just astounding how everything is just more than doubled or tripled in terms of spending and regs and federal employees. Please tell me, if that's neoliberalism, then obviously it has nothing to do with Austrian economics.
Right. And I think if the most generous interpretation of this entire thing, right, is I think that a lot of people, and of course we can talk about kind of the uselessness of the term neoliberalism, and it's almost always used as a slur. Very few people have ever actually self-identified with it. I know Milton Friedman had an article where I think he said he was a neoliberal, but yeah, that's a whole other thing. When it's contemporary usage, it's kind of just it's a punch at kind of a cartoonish view of maybe what we might call supply side economics, sort of, cutting regulation on corporations, corporate tax cuts, international trade agreements, making America less, less manufacturing and industry in America, more outsourcing elsewhere and the like. And I think some of those broader concerns are valid, right? We have seen the extent to which, say, large corporations have been willing to become proxies of the regime. The regime likes these big corporations. They like consolidation. It's understandable that you see this and say, well, I don't like that. Everyone has had it baked in their minds, right? Free markets equals love of big business. And therefore, big business is bigger than ever. Therefore, it's these bad free market folks that have resulted in this outcome. The problem, of course, is that these folks, and it's not just Amari, American Compass is the think tank out there that I think does a lot of the research propaganda along these lines. Orrin Cass is another big figure within this movement. And one, there is a, they are inherent fans of sort of conservative, I don't want to say socialism because it's not necessarily that they want to nationalize everything, though they definitely are not allergic to the idea of nationalizing certain industries. But their big focus is protection of unions and the like. They want a strong conservative interventionist state when it comes to the economy. They are the modern day heirs of Hamiltonianism, of economic nationalism, of Frederick List and the like. These are some of their big figures. And what's interesting, though, is the complete blind spot when it comes to the Fed, when it comes to monetary policy. If you look at American Compass, for example, they had a big report last year, Rethinking American Capitalism. They talk about financialization. They don't mention the Fed once. They don't talk about monetary policy once. You search the document, the couple of times the Federal Reserve will come up is when they're referencing Federal Reserve data. There's no critique. There's no understanding. There is no interest in the monetary aspect of this. And again, you think about the great saints of DC free market capitalist advocates, right? Milton Friedman is the great patron saint. Obviously, this has been beyond the methodological issues. Obviously, the blindness on Fed and monetary policy is one of the big practical, I mean, we call it, political economic differences there. And so when they punch at Mises, and of course, we've seen this from folks that I otherwise like on a lot of things, right? We've seen this from Steve Bannon. We've seen it from Tucker Carlson a time or two where they will use the term Austrian economics as sort of a, they think they're being clever as using that as sort of a slur against, libertarian free market think tank people, which again, this is always amusing to see. Maybe Tucker should talk to Ron Paul a little bit more about that. But their inability, their complete blind spot at the root of the problem that presents itself in a lot of the critiques that well-intentioned folks in this camp, and I don't consider Amari one of them. I think that he's got his particular worldview that is not alignable, but there are a lot of people who I'd otherwise have a lot of sympathies for. Their complete blind spot when it comes to that specific issue of Fed and monetary policy is what skews the entire perspective on this. And this is precisely why, if you care about your country, you should be reading Ludwig von Mises. Because again, that strikes the core at what a lot of, again, these new right critiques have. That is the missing piece. And I'm not sure how many of them are going to go out there and actually end up reading Human Action because of an MMA viral moment. But it is interesting to see that obviously there is something here, not just from the U.S., but broadly, and maybe later we can talk about the South American influence here in particular. But it is rewarding. It is very encouraging that there is at least some genuine interest in better understanding these things rather than a complete dismissal of the idea that economics has no value at all and not even something worth considering. And I think that's the positive from this weekend. And again, I think that's why it's important to punch at people like Amari, where their critiques are so silly, so rootless, and so really intellectually superficial and downright stupid. Those are the people that need to be punched at within the realm of public intellectual opinion.
Well, and again, I would note that they're saying essentially their critique is indistinguishable from the left's critique most of the time. The hardcore anti-capitalist left says essentially the same thing. Touching on what you just said, they don't think economics is a real thing. Like, they think economics is propaganda made up by business interests to support their particular private interests. They don't even regard it as a real discipline or a realm of significant serious inquiry. It's not an intellectual pursuit on any level. It's just something that the moneyed powers made up. This is something people on the left have long said, and as far as I can tell, this fits in with many on the right who make comments like Amari's as well. And we should just note that the use of the term, what it really means when used by people like Amari is you're just too free market. You're too laissez-faire. Now, there's been some debate over what does neoliberalism really mean. Now, historically, it's changed meanings a lot. So, and I just bring this up so that if anybody were to go to Mises.org, that's Mises.org, where we've got several articles on this topic, where Mises himself had been sure to separate himself from who were considered the neoliberals at the time. This is back in the post-war period, late 40s and the 50s, where the neoliberals were a specific group. They were people who were trying to rebuild, Germany after the war, and they were embracing certain aspects of free markets in attempt to build up the standard of living there. But they clearly were on the side of central banks, and they wanted a managed economy as opposed to something that was truly laissez-faire. And those were the neoliberals of that time, and Mises was very wary of those. But since the 1990s, the term has been used really just to mean anybody who wasn't hard left. And so when people like Amari use the term, when people on the left use the term, in basically every instance I can see, all they mean is neoliberal. Oh, that just means laissez-faire. That means economic liberalism. And so don't think that they mean something more nuanced than that. They just mean they're sick. It's a dog whistle term that means I don't like capitalism. I don't like free markets. And anybody who does like that, I call neoliberal. Now, the term, as it has been used, also is essentially meaningless because people have used the term to describe everyone from Hillary Clinton to Ludwig von Mises. So if that's the ideological range that this term describes, then the term is useless because obviously there are almost no policies that Hillary Clinton and Ludwig von Mises share in any meaningful practical sense. And so I suppose neoliberalism could mean not Lenin. That's essentially, it means, oh, you're not a hardcore socialist who believes in expropriation of private industries anymore. You believe maybe in the third way, like the Clintons always have, right? Oh, high taxes, regulation, subsidies. That's the Clintonian model of neoliberal. But apparently it can also mean hardcore laissez-faire, like Ludwig von Mises. So if that's what people mean by that, then the term actually has no descriptive power whatsoever, except to signal not total communist. Great, but now the term, it should just be ignored, basically, if someone's using that term, or you have to clarify what the term means. And of course, Amari hasn't clarified. I don't know what he really exactly means, but I assume he's using it in the sense of it means everybody who has ever said a nice thing about markets. And so clearly this is not a term we should use. I know that there was a brief period a few years ago where some people in Britain were using the term where they said, oh, well, I think neoliberalism just means pro-market. So we're proud neoliberals. And okay, but we don't need the term neoliberal. We just have liberal. Because except for confused Americans who continue to use the word liberal to mean social democrat or leftist, historically, the term means free market person. And if our use of terms is going to have any use beyond just the present time, that is, if we need a term to describe people who are within a larger movement, we have to keep using the word liberalism in its intended historical usage. Now, I've encountered plenty of libertarian and conservative types who their general policy is anytime the left starts using a term, you must immediately cede the ground and let them have that term forever. There's no point in fighting over vocabulary. There's no point in fighting over terminology. They just, you know, as is typical for a lot of these black pill conservative types, just give up immediately. The left decided they're expropriating this term, so let's just give it to them. And what's the point? Why bother fighting the battle? But if there's anything we've learned in recent years, it's the left excels at this game, right? When conservatives refer to being gay or not as, quote, a matter of sexual preference, Well, the leftists who write the dictionaries then rush in and redefine the term to mean, oh, it's a pejorative term. Now it's an insult term. So you can't use that term anymore. And of course, they change the definition of vaccine. They're constantly changing definitions. And as far as I can tell, a lot of conservatives just immediately give up and leave the field. So that's not a good policy. Neoliberal is intended, as you noted, it is an insult term. Almost nobody self-identifies as neoliberal. It's there to insult people who favor markets on some level. And the term really shouldn't be used unless you're using it in a very specific time period as Mises used it. And so it's obvious when someone uses the term what they're really trying to do.
Right. Of course, you know, that was one of Rothbard's great victories in a language battle, was reclaiming the term libertarian from the left. He wrote a great extent about how great that was to actually take a term back from the left, from their definition. So there is one point there in terms of that battle over the use of language there. But of course, you know, I think that, you know, one of the challenges that we do face is the extent to which, again, so much of the investment, which translates into political capital for the goal, the cause of what we might call free markets, has been so captured by various think tanks, you know, ranging from, you know, the particularly odious AEI, you know, to Heritage, which is a lot better economists right now than they have historically, so that I'm taking that as a trend there. But so many of these beltway institutions have, you know, if your idea of free markets is simply, narrowly, oh, we're going to cut the taxes for large corporations, but ignoring the consequences of the Fed, then you're really not defending capitalism. You are defending big business. And some of the critiques that came from Amari's post, right, you know, they're claiming that we Austrians, right, we want to allow the financial sector to just run without any restraints, where, again, that is, you know, that as the focus. You know, this is why we have the battles over fractional reserve banking. This is why, you know, we focus on this, you know, and have largely been standing alone on these critical issues of money and banking, because, you know, of course, anytime you hear about these these people from the right that talk about the plight of workers, what's completely ignored, of course, is the historical data when it came to purchasing power and the, you know, if you have concerns about corporate profits and the rise of the 1% and all this sort of stuff, completely ignored from that conversation is the extent to which that trend really started getting crazy after 1971, a important moment, right? They kind of lump in as they always play that game where they typically try to like start that line in the 1980s. Even if you just look at the data, if you just simply look at the chart that they are providing and ignore their highlight, you can see this is actually starting several years before that neoliberal Reagan administration, that great champion for unadulterated free markets that Ronald Reagan was. You know, read your Rothbard there. But they completely ignore that it was the socialization of the dollar. It was the unshackling of market discipline within money and banking, at the largest level, that has resulted in this. So again, the complete lack of intellectual curiosity about these issues. I went back and forth with Amari, I think it was a year ago, where he was attacking the gold standard as some sort of, you know, archaic, you know, the same sort of critiques that you would get from a Paul Krugman and the like. Again, there is complete disinterest. And even looking at their own data, recognizing what is the root, or at least, again, fine, they want to blame other factors, at the very least, something that has to be considered with this conversation. And so while Amari and his attacks are silly, there is a level of culpability from the way that the political fight, the advocacy fight from free market, you know, again, alleged free market advocates, the fact that they were the ones that were championing Alan Greenspan. They are the ones that love having Ben Bernanke attend their conferences. They are the ones that again, see the Fed as an important and useful tool for the desired ends. Because ultimately, if the way that you measure economic well-being is, you know, GDP and the success of the stock market, then that is going to lead you to coming to different conclusions than the way that we would consider, you know, a strong economy. And so again, there was a lot of the problems is the intellectual bankruptcy from the alleged free market advocates. And that is what these people are punching at. And then just, again, bizarrely throwing us within those ranks. So that, again, I think that is one of our challenges. I think when we look at the frustrations, particularly of younger Americans that are dealing with a lot of the consequences of debt, dealing with obviously the consequences of inflation, and you know, particularly notable the last several years, you know, that skepticism of markets is coming from, again, the corruption intellectually of what the alleged defenders of free markets had for decades. And this is why, you know, when you see a figure like this out there, when you see Mises out there being used as an intellectual figure for thinking outside the box, this you know, critical thinking, very, you know, lots of very interesting things going on within, you know, in your average UFC podcast when it comes to political opinion, a lot more interesting than what you're going to get on NPR or you know, cable news these days. This is one of the most subversive messages that you can get out there, because it undermines not simply authoritarian left and woke and all the cartoonish, very dangerous, don't downplay it, but all the cartoonish aspects of the authoritarian left, not just in America, but internationally, but also undermines so much of the BS propaganda that has captured allegedly intellectual institutions from the allegedly free market right.
Outside of the Austrians, you continue to see terrible economic policy spouted as conservative policy. And you see this again and again in the conservative drive to cut taxes. That is, right, taxes in statute with zero regard for spending. So that this is just a common conservative thing. Cut taxes, cut corporate taxes, cut all these taxes. Oh, well, what about government spending? We'll cut spending someday, but we'll get around to that later. What matters is cutting taxes. Well, the reality of cutting taxes without cutting spending, all that means is you've shifted the burden of the government revenue to somebody else. And you haven't hurt the power of the state in any way. And what it really means then is more deficit spending. Cut taxes. Oh, more deficit spending. Those are synonyms. I cut taxes without cutting spending. That's the same thing as saying I support more deficit spending. Well, what does more deficit spending mean? It means more inflation. It means more burden upon the working class and normal people who actually have to pay the price of real inflation, because people at the high end of the income scale, they actually tend to benefit more from monetary inflation as more money is created, because those parts of the economy, like the stock market, asset price inflation, that actually benefits from monetary inflation, and that helps people who already own a lot of assets. For people who don't own a lot of assets, monetary inflation leads to price inflation, rising prices, and that hurts regular people. So don't try and pretend that you're helping the economy by cutting taxes without cutting spending, because you're inflicting just more damage on regular people. Now, I think some people see that on some level and they suspect, oh, there's something fishy going on here, and that must be what the Austrians support. But the reality is the Austrians are virtually alone in pointing out this scam, this grift that is cutting taxes without cutting government spending. So any elected official who talks about cutting taxes without cutting spending, all he really means is, hey, we want to tax poor people more. That's what he really means. And we're the only ones that point that out. And of course, then most of these also quote-unquote conservatives, I mean, I guess this is pretty quintessential conservative behavior, is they like bailouts. They have no real fundamental understanding of how central banking works or how subsidies actually work at the high level. So anytime there's an economic crisis, oh, well, you have to bail out the big banks because then the economy will collapse. Thank goodness for the Fed. The Fed does a wonderful job managing the economy. And you had to see it in the Greenspan era to watch all these conservative Republicans just slobbering over Greenspan. And this was, of course, true in the early years of Bernanke as well, when all the Republicans were all in on Bernanke's bailout plans, TARP, all that stuff engineered by the Bush administration. They were fine with it. So there's never been, yes, any meaningful opposition to all of this corporate subsidy stuff that has been essentially the, the standard operating procedure for the federal government and the central bank over the last 15 years or so. So I get that people look at that and they think there's a problem with that. But go back and look at our site. Look at Mises.org, look at what the Austrians were saying in 2008, 2009. We were among the only people opposing all of that stuff. And somehow now we're on the side of Mnuchin and people like Yellen, who want just the same old subsidy for the rich, higher prices for the poor. That's their policies. And that's, of course, basically the opposite of the free market policies that we've been pushing for decades.
I think one of the, obviously there is an international dynamic to this that I think is also fascinating in its own right. Because obviously, it's not a coincidence that it was a Brazilian UFC fighter that made this statement. We have seen wonderful popularization of Mises within Brazil. You know, our friends at Mises Institute Brazil, at the Rothbard Institute down there, a lot of great folks down there that have been making Mises not only more relevant within intellectual circles, not only has it been aligned with political activism and students, waving their Minos Marx Mias Mises signs in the streets, but also there is this cultural dynamic there where you have celebrities particularly concerned about the direction of their country, and I think there's a much broader conversation to be had about the parallels between Brazilian politics and its trends with the future, what the American regime could look like. This big battle going on right now with censorship and the courts there, which is very, very troubling. But Tyler Cohen had a interesting article yesterday on Bloomberg that had one good point. It was, of course, then saturated with all sorts of, Mises wasn't right about everything. Sometimes they have excesses. They're crazy about getting rid of this Fed thing, right? But he did have make a note that we've talked about on the show in the past and has come up, came up a lot during private conversations at AERC, is the extent to which Latin America is seeing a real surge in interest here, not only in Brazil. Obviously Milei as a major figure within Argentina. Bukele, the president of El Salvador, has talked about Mises and Rothbard and Austrians, and obviously very big in the Bitcoin community. And I think when we, when we consider not only what this means in terms of the realms of the popularization of the ideas that obviously we care a great deal about, that we think are solutions for a lot of the ills that are plaguing us, both in America and globally, but geopolitically, right? One of the most fascinating dynamics out there is, again, I think broader recognition of a growing multipolar world. This is often kind of depicted as either America versus China or America versus, the dollar versus the BRICS, right? And I think one of the most interesting dynamics globally is the extent to which, given this surge in the popularity of these ideas, something that Mises wrote a great deal about the importance of ideas and the influence of the population at large, not simply with narrow narrow political groups and the like, that there needs to be a broader awareness of this sort of stuff. The conditions of actually creating a third way, where it's not simply exchanging the being a puppet of DC for being a puppet of Beijing for trading the dollar for the BRICS and all the problems that you can look at the head of the BRICS bank. It's former socialist president from Brazil, Rousseff. Have a feeling, again, very skeptical of a gold standard coming out of there anytime soon. Let me just put it that way. But you know, the opportunity for some of these countries that are willing to do what conservatives here, you know, like conservative politicians here, are unwilling to do when it comes to addressing these issues, like actually cutting spending, like dealing with the monetary policy that, you know, the ideas of which, you know, America has exported around the world. And so, you know, is there the possibility for the this growing awareness of an alternative where it's not simply socialism versus, you know, cartoonish, you know, big business capitalism, but can it actually, you know, but that there are a true radical free market alternative to it? If that takes root in some of these countries, if that can be followed through with the meaningful policy changes therein, and if they prove to be successful as we would expect them to be, you know, that has a big opportunity to, again, demonstrate the inadequacies and insufficiencies of both the critics or of the critics of these ideas from both the left and the right in America. Because, again, there's nothing more, I think, you know, a lot of people, they're never motivated by theory as much as they are by results. And so, again, I'm very excited to see that this is a truly a global surge in the interests of these ideas and the opportunity for, again, practicing what we preach, not in America anytime soon with the state of Washington, but perhaps in these other areas that can, again, further demonstrate why a focus on monetary policy, the Fed, and interventionism writ large is so important to, you know, having the actual results, you know, that we desire, not simply, you know, a booming stock market and the growing consolidation of corporate industry.
Yeah, it requires something more than just saying the United States has a free market system and whatever new regulation you've got, well, that's bad. That's something that we've been trying to overcome in recent years, is just in columns at Mises.org and also on this podcast, just begging people stop calling the U.S. healthcare system, for example, free market. I think things have gotten so bad now that maybe that's died away. But even in the days when we were talking about introducing Obamacare, which of course, after Republican presidents and multiple Republican majorities in Congress, has never been repealed or even chipped away at in any meaningful way, because that's how Republicans roll. People were still insisting, "Ah, yes, Obamacare. That will be a terrible shift away from our free market medical system." Well, if you thought the American medical system was remotely free market in the year 2005, I mean, you're just living in a fantasy land. And to say the same, to describe the American economy and all its myriad of regulations and its high taxes, runaway inflation today, and say, oh, it's a free enterprise system, and that somehow compares to how the American economy functioned in the year 1915, for example, I mean, you're just completely out to lunch. You have no idea what's going on. So probably time to admit, folks, that every new regulation is not a stab at America's free market economic system. It's just another bad thing added on to America's interventionist economy, America's third way economy, America's social democratic economy, which is what it's been since the 1930s. But I guess many people, they just keep living this fantasy that until the day before yesterday, America was free market. But that's pretty typical for conservatives. Their time frame is no longer than 20 years. So the ideal for them is what America looked like 20 years ago, maybe 40 years ago. And that's all that they can hope for. That's their whole ideal, is if we can just go back 20 or 30 years, then we'll be back to reclaiming the real America. Well, I can tell you that America of 1965, 1975, is a completely different country from America in 1850 in terms of taxes, business regulation, what you could do in terms of starting a business, healthcare, all of that stuff. It's just absurd to speak in these terms, but that's again how they're functioning. And that's why I guess also they live in this fantasy that, well, we can just, let's just cut taxes and then everything will be fine. And then they just completely ignore the role of the central bank. And it's too difficult for them to understand. So they pretend it doesn't exist. And it's very disappointing. And as long as they do that, they're just going to have very few tools to fight back against the people who critique the economic system for the disaster that it currently is. Because all they've got, all these conservatives got is, oh, if you just cut taxes a little bit, if you just chip away a little bit at Obamacare, then America will be back to this glorious free market system. And they just simply do not know what they're talking about. So they're easy targets then for anti-capitalists to go after. There's no consistency. There's no real knowledge of economic history in the United States. There's no knowledge of how the banking system works. And so it's not surprising that they just keep losing again and again. And when you try and approach them and say, you know, maybe you should get a grip on what the actual economic theory is here so you understand it better, then they usually just go off on something about how we don't need theory, we need application right now. yeah, okay, well, how's that been working? They just seem to think that winning elections then fixes everything. Well, how come that just never seems to work out? But here's where we are. Those are the people who are in charge of economic policy, not the Austrians. And that's just why we are where we are.
I do think it's, you know, sometimes it's easy to become numb to this because, you know, we're the fish in water that, you know, doesn't know it's wet because we're always surrounded by it all the time. And obviously anyone listening to Radio Rothbard, chances are, any new listeners after UFC 300, I'm glad to have you here, but you know, most of our listeners have been very familiar with these ideas for some time. But it is just, you know, just taking a step back and just recognizing how truly incredible it is that a man who died 50 years ago is able to have moments like this. I mean, I don't know if any other, you know, there's not many other intellectuals out there, regardless of discipline, where you have figures in sports or, you know, outside of, you know, the intellectual environment being talked about like this. And obviously, you know, a lot of these, you know, the seeds of this have been planted in large part because of Lou Rockwell and the Mises Institute, obviously all the work that Murray Rothbard did to continue that legacy, all the other great scholars that have been publishing and building and advocating for this. There's been a whole lot of that structure of production and ideas, you know, has been going on for decades and decades and only made possible for the people that donate to places like the Mises Institute and the like. So there's a lot of people that are responsible for this incredible achievement, you know, how you get from Mises writing Human Action to a UFC fighter talking about it, you know, with Joe Rogan is, you know, there's a lot that goes between those two points. But it is just incredible that something like this is happening. And we've seen similar booms in the past, right? You know, we had the Ron Paul movement here, you know, in the United States politically. We've seen people talk about this elsewhere. We've seen people do projections on central banks saying, you know, read Mises and the like. You know, there's been all sorts of these, you know, grassroots popular efforts to highlight this, you know, to highlight the importance of these ideas. But it is just, it's so neat. And for all of the, you know, most of when Ryan and I talk, right, we're talking about why things are bad, why, you know, how horrible the economy is, how the Fed can screw things up, all the stupid politicians that have way too much control in our lives. But I just want to leave on this very positive, reflective note on just how neat this entire thing is right now. And again, ultimately, the only way out of this is not you know, edgy tweeting and the like, but actually getting normal people who would never crack open an economics book to recognize that understanding this theory that we've talked about, understanding these ideas actually have a direct impact. You know, explain why they are feeling the anger and hurt and insecurity and so many of the real problems, the very, very real problems out there. You know, reading the books of dead economists turns out actually does matter. And so it's just, again, on that closing note, again, just, it is always worth being able to savor moments like this. Anything you have to say, Ryan, before we close out of here?
Just in the immortal words of a championship UFC fighter, if you care about your country, read Ludwig von Mises.
By that definition, I don't know if Saurabh Amari cares about his country. And we will leave it on that note. We will be back next week. Look forward to it. So glad to be back doing new content. Please, we always like to hear from our listeners as well. If you have any topics you want us to cover, always feel free to reach out. You can email me at tho@mises.org. Would love to hear from you. And this has been Radio Rothbard. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.